Welcome to Big Talk for Breeders. My name is Michael Doherty, a show-jumping breeder from the west of Ireland. And in each episode, I'll bring you a new interview with a successful sport horse breeder. Thanks for checking out the podcast. Now let's get started. This is episode number 30 with German breeder Gerd Kust. A former lawyer, Gerd has been a breeder of sport horses in the north of Germany for over 50 years. In addition to being a breeder, Gerd is also an inspector, a coach, and an FEI judge.
I thought we should start this interview by giving a shout out to Michelle Beck in the USA, because it was Michelle that recently brought your Facebook comment to my attention, and it really got my interest. So it was your comment in relation to one of your homebreds now being qualified for the Olympic Games. For those listening who might not have seen it, could you just go into a little bit of detail on what that comment was and what the Paris Olympics could mean for your breeding program and your dam line, Stam 8888?
It's a big surprise that one of your horses are qualified for the Olympics. So there was from this dam one in show jumping and one in eventing. And so normally then you could stop breeding. That's success enough. But then to have just this one, this one was very special breeding. It was planned after I used Sir Donald with his mare. There was Gribaldi coming to Paul Schokemol's stable. And I just gave them a call. I want to have served by him for this mare. And then this horse died. Gribaldi died. And my mare was not falling early enough. So, and then, no, it's not possible. Only frozen semen. We have only a few straws here. And say, no. I ordered early enough. And otherwise, I will call Paul personally. So, because I know, I did the pictures for the 21st PSI auction for Paul from the first auction. So the contact was there. So, and then I want to bring just this stallion to a Leisning with 2.5. And he was really small, 162, not more. And then I thought, okay, let's wait. And then he was licensed with 4.5. Not before, then he was grown up to 166, but not more. And this time, my daughter was riding him. I think she was winning every young horse classes she did with him. And then I had to talk to a friend, and we did a bet. I think he should go to the Bundeschampionat. I said, no, that's not, it's too early. He's not ready for that. Ah, I know one. You would do it to compete him there. And okay, he was qualified first as a 3-year-old for the Bundeschampionat. But not with my daughter. We had a specialist on him who was riding Bundeschampion nearly every year. So on this 4, Vivi was riding him there. With 5, he was in the stable with Emma Canerva already. Then she competed him there. So 3 years in a row. And then, yeah, he was qualified for Frankfurt. And all the young horse classes. And then he went to with 7 to the World Championships in Ermelo. Also was on the final there. And so this was very special. So that was the last, it was the last he could do now, because he was competing 2 times at European Championships, 1 time at World Championships. And now the Olympic, that is the top of the top on the top. So just for breeding. So makes breeders and his whole family proud. And so, okay, normally I could stop breeding dressage horses. Everything was there. So
it's incredible versatility in a line that can produce an Olympic horse in, or a horse even capable of competing at the Olympics in all three of the Olympic disciplines.
Yeah, it is the show jumping, because it's a show jumping line. And there was a road crossing where I, because I bred the father to Florestan, to this normally named dressage horse, but he wasn't only dressage horse. He was also in the young horse ranking in Germany, place four with young horses. So it produced good show jumpers, not the 160 very famous championship horses, but many good horses, 145, 150, 140. And and I have ridden the mother from Fordelia, so grandmother to Florestan, and she was an amazing show jumper. She had a injury at her tendon, so she couldn't compete anymore. And I like just this mare. And my parents, my grandparents, they have been always Hanoverian breeders. And they didn't want to go to Furioso at that time, because Furioso was, he was an Anglo-Norman, Celle-Francais, in Germany, in Oldenburg. And I'm growing up just at the border to Süd-Oldenburg, to the Vorwerk's place there. And it was, you know, for me, it was not allowed with my own horses or the horses of my father. So I asked my friend, can I rent your horse, this mare? And I will try to go to Furioso. My father was, no, she wasn't very happy. So he was not amused that I did it. And but that was Fidelio, and Fidelio was a father later to Florestan. So, and then I had the idea I could cross my both lines. And that was the result, was the Florestan mare. And so from her are coming all the dressage horses, mm-hmm. not from the other part of this line. And then there was one, the mother to Chippy, who was at the Olympics in London with Kenki Sato. And he won Boccolo before, and he was bred also normally for show jumping. But in my breeding line, there's a lot of thoroughbred in the background. There was Manometer, there is, I think the mother to Cine Dream has, not sure, I think five times Lady Killer. No, Lord again, must be six times Lady Killer in there. There's Manometer, there's Gauna. So a lot of thoroughbred, but in the background. It's the fifth, sixth, seventh generation. But it's coming from the back. So, and then it happens that there is a good inventor.
You've been breeding for 50 plus years, is that correct?
Yeah.
And when you...
50 plus, it is. I bred my first when I've been 17. So... it's 55 years.
When you started off breeding, had you a particular goal in mind, or what were you trying to achieve at that time?
Oh, at that time changed a lot. But at that time, I'm growing up in an area where they bred more dressage horses, okay. Hanoverian dressage horses. Other parts in Hanover, they bred a lot of show jumpers, but it was the area around Dannenberg with Agram and this good stallion there. And then I was 16, and it was allowed for me in holidays, school holidays, to work for the auction in Pferden. And that opens my mind totally, because before you're living in your small area,
yeah.
There was no internet, there was no clip my horse, there was, you saw only the horses bred from some stallions, they are based in your area. That was all. And in Pferden, okay, then I saw different types and good show jumpers. And then I, at there, I met a person who was breeding, and he told me about one mare by Ferdinand. So, and was 20 years old, she was 19 years old. Okay, and I just had about 1,000 German marks at that time. I earned there, and what I earned also at home, what I was got from my grandfather. So, and for this money, I bought this mare. So I couldn't drive by myself, but my father had to pick up this mare. He was, again, not amused. A mare from a different part of the Hanoverian breeding in our stable. That was the first one. It was a show jumper. And she was pregnant by Zervos. So also a show jumping bloodline there. That was the first. And then the next was, I can't remember who was the next one I bred with. But most times show jumper, because it was for a young boy or a young man, much more interesting to breed show jumpers than dressage horses. Mm-hmm. I start with dressage horses when I start, or was during my studying, because it was less work. You could sell them earlier and for more money. That was the reason. And at that time, I'm good friend for a long, long time with Heinrich Ramsburg, with his stable. He built up his stable, and there was always this connection. And what can I use? What can I buy there a foal? And at that time, I bought foals for my small money I had at that time. But most times it has been show jumpers.
And what would you say at this moment, currently in your breeding program, what is your main goal? Like, what are the things that you are still aiming to achieve?
There's one goal I want, but it's like a flight to the moon. I want to breed champion stallion in dressage. I have had the champion stallion in show jumping, but one in dressage. That's a goal, but it's you must have a goal, otherwise you don't step forwards.
Yeah.
But to breed good sport horse, that is a goal to breed. That is normally it's a goal to breed a good sport horse for the next year. I can't see 10 years ahead. But we have to look ahead, because our horses we are breeding now, in 10 years, we know, are they so good as that you want to have them?
Yeah. What does your breeding program look like at the moment in terms of numbers? How many mares are you covering, and what's the breakdown between mares for jumping and mares for dressage?
Oh, the mares... jumping dressage is 30% show jumpers, not more, because it's too expensive. If you can't train them by yourself, or your children are left home and you have to give them somewhere, then it's too expensive, and nobody will pay for the years, for the training, for the education of the horses. For years, everybody is wanting, is looking for a 5-6 year old horse that they can compete in the young horse classes. But if you break them late with four, then you have 2-3 years work. 3 years, €10,000 minimum. And then the farriers and the x-rays later. And so, and if you're asking 50-60,000 for a young 6 year old horse, nobody wants to pay. if you have the same quality as a dressage horse, it's easy. You can have 100 for the same quality.
So did you say 30%, only 30% jumping mares?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. And approximately
no,
how...
No, that is...
Oh, the other way.
I still have, I think, 6-7 jumping mares.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm breeding from with some of them dressage stallions.
Okay.
And it works. It works. But now I have some old contenders, the mother to Cine Dream. Then I have a second contender mare. Then I have a Don mare. I have a Cassini mare who's more there. So we have them. We have them. But I can sell the products from a dressage stallion much better, earlier and easier than this. So I don't want to lose my good show jumping line, but it will be in a small line.
Okay. So on average, how many foals are you having in a normal year? How many foals have been born?
Last year, 2023, I had 8. Next year, I'm waiting for 6. So that is in between 6 and 8. That is
okay.
That's the numbers.
From the ones that you're expecting this year, is there one that excites you a little bit more than the others?
No, it's always exciting. It doesn't mean the breeding. It is, there is not a ranking that you have a special. Maybe sometimes you have one again. I'm expecting one by Cinedine again.
Mm-hmm.
But I also have some good dressage by Extreme or by Bon Courage. It's the same. No, it's not. I think I never had a ranking in the breeding, because very often the foals from this lower rankings are at the end better than the other ones. And I try not to breed by names or only flashy stallions. The combination makes the product at the end, and that is, yeah. You're planning, and you're planning again, and you have 5 stallions you want to choose from, then at the end, at 3, and then 2, and then it's the date where the mare has to be inseminated, and then you have to say, this one. So, and then, okay, sometimes I'm driving to the stallion station and pick up the semen by myself, because I've been very late with my last decision. So I'm happy about some breedings. I'm happy also that I have still one mare by Voltaire. She's now turning 4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Michelle has also one by Voltaire from us. That is special blood, and I hope that it will work in future with this blood. Okay, we have a Don one, but no, I like this Voltaire. That's a special horse. I like them all, and I like to see them when they're just born, wet in the straw there,
yeah.
And say, okay, it's this one, it's okay, and this one, he can grow, he can grow.
When they start to go out the field and in those first few weeks, how do you assess your foals? What are the main things that you're looking for? The main early signs or signals or characteristics that you think, okay, this is what I wanted. This is something special.
Yeah, that's why normally I always want to be there when they are born. I think if the foal is just born and wet and laying there on the straw, then you can see the confirmation, the construction of the bones. You can see later, then they are getting fat and the shoulder is not stretched enough. And then very often you have this feeling you can't explain. Sometimes I'm wrong, but and then let them grow 3 days, 3 months, 3 years. This doesn't work always. Some are a little bit late, but what I'm looking for is for the legs. No, first, more than for the joints. The hocks are strong enough, the knees strong enough, the fetlocks, and it's normal that they are pedaling, that they are standing, showing outward, that doesn't matter. But it's the construction of the bones that is, I think that's for me important. And then you see before the mother, the mare, is teaching their foals, you can see the character. What they're going, if they're going straight on, if they're a little bit shy, and those things that will stay. And some they're friendly, they're coming towards you as a human. If you're coming in the box, that will stay, and that is also important. I think the character or if a horse is trusting other or also you as a human, it's important later. It's easier to work with them, and you see also if a foal is going. If a foal wants to do something and goes directly straight on, if there's a group of other foals, other horses, she goes straight on, not around, straight on. Those things, I think also it's important. It's my experience, all foals we have had where I said, oh, she's like you. I told my daughter, it's like you, always straight on, not waiting. But these are foals. As a jumper, as a dressage horse, they are straight. They are doing their job. They are self confident. But if they trust you, they're nice to handle. That is, I think that is a very important thing also for the future. The same weight and soundness for me. And what's that? Longevity.
Also, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's also important.
When you're selling your foals, you mentioned about in the market, how much it costs to produce the horse before the market really wants them, and then they don't really want to give you the cost of producing them. But what's your preference? What age would you like to sell your homebreds at? Or what's the norm?
Normally, I sold only one foal the last, I think, 12 years to another person. And that was a black one to Michelle Beck.
Okay.
I never sold foals before because everybody wants to buy the good ones. But the good ones, I need also to feed the other ones.
Yeah.
When you are breeding, you never will have 100%. So if you have by six foals, two really good ones, two good ones, two normal ones, or maybe one less than normal. So, and to bring this percentage up, if you have 50% really good horses, that's a goal. But I think you can't produce more really good ones. That is, that are animals that are creatures, that is not a machine, And then you need the good ones and the bad ones. Nobody wants to buy. I offered one just, no, it's not 3 years ago, for 1,000 euros. 1,000 euros. Nobody wants to buy this foal. Okay, then you have to raise them. So, and then you sold them with 2,500. So then you know how much money profit. You lost. Yeah. So and that's why the good ones, it's not, if you sold a good one or you had a stallion as a licensing or whatever, then people are coming, clapping your shoulder and saying, oh, man, you have had and such a good price. No. They always looking for this horse and not for all the others. So, and your backyard is big enough to also that they are running some where you spend money. So, and that's why I don't sell foals. Okay, if there would be a best friend, he wants one of your fillies, and you are sure, okay, for him it's a start for a new breeding. Mm-hmm. Then I would do it. Yeah. But the others with three, then you know how they are. Okay, and then if the vet is happy with the x-rays, so also this is one step. And it's true what said. You can make 1 million easily with horses per year if you have had 10 million before.
Do you produce many in the sport yourself in your own ownership at the moment?
Yes, we have one, the Kidam, then we have a Secret. But normally, if they're competed for 1 year, then they're gone. I just have one, yeah, still two. One, he's just yesterday, we made a video. He's now on offer. He's a dressage horse. He's a brother to Greek Air and the other Grand Prix horses. He's now, he will turn 11 in summer, but he's ready for, I would say, they told me yesterday it's ready for Grand Prix, but I think for a small Grand Prix, he's at the moment ready, but in summer he will be ready for Grand Prix. And then I have the brother to Cine Dream and Quivi Dream from the same mother by Kuhlman. He is now turning 5. But I'm not sure how long I will keep him. Okay. Normally with 5, we have a secret more. Should be an Aventa, but also she's now on the market. But normally I like to have them 1 year longer, not to break them with 3, to break them with 4. I think it's not so good for my money, yeah. But it's better for the horses. Mm. And many things are done too early. So it's and if they're in the stable, okay, then you're thinking, okay, it costs you every month 500 euros here only in the stable, feeding them, bring them in the fields, then they're for 100 euros. So it's cheaper. And then when they're coming back from the fields just close to the sea, North Sea here, they're coming, they're developed. And also, it's for your eye, for yourself, you're much happier when you see them. They are not babies, they are starting becoming a real horse.
And I know your daughters are involved with you in the horses, and I know one of them in the past won a European team gold medal in the eventing. Are either of your daughters still riding any of your horses at the moment?
Yes, Vivi is riding one of mine. And she has one, it's only 49% is mine. It's mare by Kidam.
Okay.
She is the sister, not the sister, she's a niece to Cine Dream. Okay. And she likes this horse And okay, then she was discussing, can we do this? Can we do that? Then no, you shouldn't ask me. Yeah, but it's your horse. It's a no. It's no. It's your horse. 51% is yours. So, so that she's competing her, and up to at the moment 135, and the other one, a young one from mine, and the other daughter is she's a dentist. When she's coming home for visiting, most times or mainly her sister, then she is always with her in the stable. She's going with it to competitions, but she's not competing and riding only sometimes.
Okay.
But Vivi will continue with the breeding, and just I try to change many things, and she will be the breeder, and she's involved. Both are involved in decisions. Okay, the last decision is always made by the senior. That is like that is like old farmers did it 100 years ago. So, but no, we are talking about, we are discussing, and they are both involved.
Do they ever surprise you with their suggestion or their input? Like, do they ever get you to rethink your suggestions, or bring us maybe a combination to the table that you really weren't considering?
Yeah, with Don VHP,
mm-hmm.
And Vivi was following him, and then she went to Hamburg to Derby, show jumping Derby, and I think he won there. And then she came to Daddy, I want to that our Konrad Obolensky mare. I want to fall by him. You want to fall by him? Yeah. She wants. I pay the fees. And no, you haven't to pay the fee. I can organize the straws and okay. No, that was one. Then Vivian was also always a fan of Kidam de Revel.
Mm-hmm.
And she also made pressure that we send Panam Air, the contender mare at that time, to Kidam.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to send her to Denmark, because a friend of my cousin and this combination, he taught semen by Kidam de Revel, and that was also part of Vivi's decision, yes?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Then sometimes, okay, when I'm thinking, I know bloodlines and mother lines and this combination, okay, that is for 50 years, you know a little bit more, and you can... Your mirror backwards is much bigger than there, but very often they have a feeling what the market is asking for at the moment. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
That is helpful also, and that is, breeding should be a teamwork. It's not only one person. Yes. It is.
Yes. And I find as well, even by having some of these conversations, in different conversations, there's just, you hear a different point of view. And when you hear it put really well, or somebody else's perspective, it really gets you to go away and reflect on your own approach. The decision mightn't happen immediately, but it might happen in small steps or over a period of time. I meant to ask you, with your horses' names, I've noticed a lot of the horses in recent times carry air. Is that to do with a particular mare, or is that something that you've started putting on everything? And where did that come from?
It was a joke. It was a joke because Lauda Air, the Landadel mare, she was bucking, and a friend of mine was breaking her, and he fell off. And he fell off a second time. He fell off a third time. So, and then after 14 days, whatever, he said, we have to register her at the in Warndorf at the National Federation. I want to jump her. So, okay. But what's her name? Said, what's her name? Yeah, this Flugzeug, this airplane must have a name. Say, there is it. And that was the first time saying, now it's Lauda Air. And then there was a big problem. At that time, Lauda, Niki Lauda and his airline, I think the accident, the crash with the airplane was later. But Lauda Air was, yeah, it was well known. And in Warndorf, they sent me the papers back, said it's not allowed. Saying, okay, why it's not allowed? No, it's a protected name. Saying, okay, but you have Chanel number 5. Yeah. You have 150 in this. Then I want that they all have to be scratched. Oh, no, and that is saying, okay, think about it. So that was starting with air, and then first we start with airline. That was only one. It was an idea of the girls. We can, the males, air, and the females, airline. But I think Lauda is already air.
Yeah, so, you had Panama Air. Yeah.
And then it was only Cine Dream. They changed the name because Quivi Dream was already there. They wanted the dream to connection to Quivi Dream. Mm-hmm. And Quivi Dream was also it was also a special name because he was born when my daughter was at the Europeans. And during the Europeans, my friend, my mare's been stable, he called me and said, he's born. It was in August. He's born. I said, and how is he? Yeah, he is born. I said, how is he? He is bay. I want to know, how is he? A little bit like Quivi Dream. And Quivi Dream was Vivi's European horse for the championship. Yes. There. He was a sorbet. He has a short face, but a little bit Roman nose. Think, oh God, yet now we have a fall by the Roman nose. But at the end, it wasn't. But that was then the reason to name him Quivi Dream, because he was born when Quivi Dream was become a European champion there. So that was the thing with that name. And the Stammnummer was also a big project. Normally, I ask for a Stammnummer because you have to have three in the main studbook registered mares in a row. So, and that was because the one was a Dutch mare. Then we had three in a row Holsteiner main studbook mares. Mm-hmm. So, and then I asked for the number. And I thought, oh, you can be a little bit naughty. Ask for 9,999. And then they sent me back, it's not possible because we are at the moment at 6,000. And it goes in a row. So, okay. And then just, I had a fight. At that time, I was a lawyer. I had a nice project to them. It was with Caletto 3, number 3. And I was sure I will win this at the court. So, and then, they haven't been very happy. And then I was at the same time with one mare with not this bloodline to a mare show and want to register the foal by Landadel. That also, it was the first one by Landadel had when Landadel was just licensed. Landadel is not accepted. It's not, we can't do it. But in your rules, they're standing. The first foal from the non-accepted stallion from a mare from another breeding line, it will be registered in Holstein. No. He said, okay, I go home and I send him a message during 1 week, they had to brand him and to register. And then I told them at Tuesday, 12 o'clock, 5 to 12 or 10 to 12, they are calling me. Oh, you're right. We have to register this. Yeah, when can we come next week? Say, no, you have 5 minutes. And if you're talking too much, then time is gone. It costs you 500,000 German marks at that time. My paper is ready. I will go to the court and do it in the post, in the postcards, in the post things there. So because as a lawyer, for me, it was only across the street. And he knows it. Saying, oh, I have to think about it. Saying, you have only 2 minutes. I give you 2 minutes more if you have to think about. But at 12:02, I will leave my office and go to the court. And then he gave me, yeah, it's a lot. What number you want? And then I thought, oh, not 9,000, 8,888. It's a little bit closer to your numbers you are giving now. Oh, that is perfect. So, because the 8,888, you can read from the top, from the bottom, from the left, from the right, all the same. That was the story with this.
Okay. I read somewhere that in your role as an inspector or an assessor, that you have inspected over 5,000 mares in your time. And if that number is correct, it's quite crazy. But
yeah, it's mares that have been served 14 years. 14 years. Nearly 300 mares only in Holstein. 3,000, 4,500 here. Yes. And then all together in Australia, in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's an incredible amount of horses to see. And also not just to see, but to be inspecting. You know, it's a very concentrated approach. But I wondered, what have been your main learnings? Because you've been fortunate to be in this situation where there's a lot of horses presented in front of you. You have to give your opinion on them. What have been the main learnings over those years? Like, have there been traits that a lot of those special horses have shared? Like either the ones that went on to be good jumpers or the ones that went on to be good breeding mares. Like what were your main learnings from looking at that amount of horses?
Oh, learning is, I think the best learning, if you see a horse as a foal, as a yearling, as a 2-year-old, and later. So then you learn how they can develop. But when you are coming from a breeder's family, you have seen many horses before. And you know how they can develop. So you're not only looking for not so good hawks or whatever. Many things can change. And they're winning in all colors and all confirmations at the end. But the learning is, yeah, I think learning by doing. And I had to pay a lot of money because I didn't watch the horse correctly or good enough. So and learning was, I think it's a time I learned from my father, from my grandfather, from old breeders when I was 12 13 14, then listening, and then many things you didn't understand, but it came later, but you have heard about the things, how they are talking. And then that was the main thing. But for me, it's very, very important to have a horse with correct legs, because legs, that was also one thing my grandfather told. The legs are like the wheels of a car. If they are not balanced, then you can use them 10 years. And with a good legs, they can work 20 years. So that is one part. And then later, talking to other breeders, it's very, very important. sometimes you're just on the way, leaving your path. And then they said, okay, no, I would come back. This one is the right direction. The type changed. The sport changed. And you have to go with the time. You have to think about what's the right type of horse for the sport. So we are breeding for sport, not for working on the fields.
When you're doing your own selections, when you're at home, and you are deciding which mares or which fillies are good enough to enter your breeding program, what for you are the most important traits looking at a horse for a potential broodmare in your program?
I think you can start from the right, you can start from the left. The genetic is very, very important. It's becoming more and more important because now we can follow also other breedings, other mother lines, other genetics. When I'm growing up in 1960 and 70, it's only your own area. Mm-hmm. But now it's by horse selects, by a lot of things. The genetic is important. There is never 100% the perfect mare. There is never a perfect mare. There's always something you can improve. But the character should be really okay. And then later, rideability. As a show jumper, the confirmation, strong enough back, good canter. There are coming many, many, many things together. And at the end, it's a feeling. What are you? Because with Cinedine, when I used him for Cinedream, I'm looking for heartbreaker blood. So, and then I found him in combination with Kidam blood and heartbreaker blood. I think, okay, that can be. And then I saw him in Stuttgart. It's like, okay, that's the right stallion. He did a very, very good job there. His jumping was good. His bloodline was good. And that could compare to mine. That's not always easy to explain why, which stallion. There's not always only one. There's always an alternative. But if you can find this one you want, at the moment, I was happy to find just this stallion.
Over the past number of years, the mares that produced your best performers or your best stallions, either in show jumping or in dressage, have a lot of those special mares shared any traits? Had they any main similarities that other breeders listening can look out for in their own mares and in their own breeding program? Or have they all been different?
Yes, they have. They have different characteristics in some parts. Show jumper, a little bit more blood. But they have one characteristic they have all. So they are very, very friendly and handsome, friendly mares. I never would breed with a mare with a not so, such a nice character.
Okay.
It is in this breeding line, it is. And if there's one little bit outside, we just had one by Don, and she was sold. So I don't want to breed with her. Maybe she is a good show jumper, produced top horses, but she's not the one would fit or in my breeding program.
You've produced, I think, over 20 different licensed stallions during your time in breeding. When you're assessing a stallion, you can look at this as the breeder or as the inspector, but when you're judging young stallions or young colts, what's the main difference between selecting jumpers versus selecting potential stallions and sires? Like what's the difference when you're in that ring and you're assessing a bunch of stallions, or you're deciding which colt to put forward for approvals? What's the difference between a horse that's just a good jumper and a horse that has stallion potential?
Oh, when you are standing there in a licensing team, then you shouldn't look as a breeder, because then you are you prefer this and that. The a stallion should look like a stallion, a male, and not like a gelding. But then the next important thing is how they are jumping. First is the jumping, and then the conformation included the movements. Also, I think good show jumper should move nicely with a good canter, but also in trot. Okay, I just had three. It's not such a nice trot. That was Kiwi Dream, and Senior Dream is also a little bit limited, but they had a perfect canter that therefore. But a strong back is good. And then also, it's a nice thing. You see them only free jumping. If you could see them under saddle, would be much, much, much better. And here in Australia, they have to be under saddle. It's a second selection. They have to show them under saddle. But free jumping, we all know it, that many of them, they are coming from special stables. They are prepared, and you never know what's nature and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But a nice stallion can make a mistake. One pole, erection. The erection at the next time, that's the most important thing. So, but for me, it should be first look like a stallion, not like a gelding, because in the past we saw that stallions, they're looking like a gelding. They're not producing. Producing are the others, like Furioso, like Ramiro, that my both of my favorite stallions from 50 years. So they are looking like stallions. We have the other in Westphalia, Pilot. He was a stallion, was sometimes a bit naughty, but he was a stallion. Landadel also, he was a stallion. That was a good producer. Landgraf, he was a stallion. So he looks like a stallion. So
yeah, and over the years, there have been horses that I looked at that were, they were nice jumpers, they were good sport horses, and they were available as breeding stallions. But I always found myself just on the fence if they looked like a nice gelding.
Yeah.
It was harder to be convinced.
Yeah, but they always have a good advertising by winning Grand Prix in Geneva, wherever. But a stallion is only so good than his progenies. And if a stallion doesn't produce good offspring, then he's a good sport horse. But then he's not a stallion or a sire, a good sire.
Yeah.
And that, I think that is a big, big difference between a good sire and a good sport horse. So,
through your experience of bringing stallions for approval, or through your experience as being an inspector, if you could go and change how the sport horse world inspects or approves stallions, what would you change?
I think it is not becoming better through the sport. It's only more open. Everybody can see the stallions. The stallions from the Landgestüt, the state stars, they haven't been in sport, but many of them, they produce really good. They're stallions. Also for my breeding, the same. But now we see only 160, 160, 160 horses. They're proof in sport. That's okay. But that's not the only one. That's not the only thing. For me, very often, a good stallion can only jump on 145, and then he's going back. Like Paul Chocomel has, who was a Chuck Fly, I think. Chuck Fly, I saw some progenies from him, for example. Really, really, really good jumpers. He by himself. I think 140, that's all. And he's now back in breeding. Some others too. Okay, TV is helpful, Clip My Horse is helpful, but it's not always the best stallion. He jumps 160. I think sometimes 140 stallions can bring the same. With my breeding, I'm happy to breed a 160 horse, but none give me the recipe for breeding 160 horses. So you always have 130 horses. So, and I think 90% or 80%, they are only able to jump 1.20 meters and not more. So for breeding, yeah, breeding, they're told always it's a thing for generations to give it to the next generation. And they also, you can give them a good breeding line, but you never can be sure that they only can produce 140 to 160 horses. I think my horses, I think there are about more than 20 from nearly 90 foals in total. So from maybe 60 show jumpers. More than 20 have 1.40 meters and more. But it's not only because I have had always the right idea. I think they are coming very often in the right hands, mm-hmm. to the right rider. And maybe I have had luck because I'm based here just in Holstein, still in Holstein. We have a lot of show jumping riders around. And then they're coming in the right hands. If you're living maybe Berlin direction Poland, there is nothing. They can have the same good horses. And I don't believe always these stories is the 160 horse. Very often there are really 140 horse, and that's they have a limit. But it's not bad. Why? It is bad to have only 140 horse. Right? You can be happy to have a 160 horse. Shouldn't be sad to have 140 horse. That is the same, yeah. Is your glass half full or half empty? It's the same. If you're thinking it's always half full, it's much better positive thinking.
Yeah, it's true. You mentioned about your grandfather and what you learned from your grandfather, and especially the example of the horse's legs, like the wheel on the car. But I'm wondering, outside of your family, who are the people that had the biggest influence on you in terms of your involvement with horses? Was there any other people outside of family that were quite influential on you?
I learned a lot of show jumping during my time when I did the pictures for the 21 auctions for Paul Schockemöller. That was a process. I think I started when I was 23 or 24. I was riding auction in Vechta for 4 times. So, and then I start also make the pictures. And then, yeah, I know Paul from before, and he is a horseman. People can say what they want. He is a horseman. Then for pictures there, and we had to work sometimes later than midnight. Then at that time I saw them all. Hans Horn was there, Ernst Hochschwell was there, then Klappi was there later. I met there Ludger Baerbaum, I met there Frankes Lothar, who was more there. They all have been there, and that was so interesting. I learned a little bit technique jumping, not only how they prepared them, also the brain of horses, totally different horses. So there have been maybe 30 to each auction, but we had to make the pictures for 60 horses, and every year 60, 70 horses and good horses. But they are very, very different from different bloodlines. And at that time, I can remember some from bloodlines I never heard before, but Paul had them and said, oh, that is one. There I learned a lot, really a lot. And for breeding, I can't say this is, there are many, many. The discussions with Landstallmeister Lehmann from Warendorf was always helpful. He was very special. He has his mind, and there was not a real discussion with him, but listen and bring it in your own program. That was helpful. He knows a lot about horses and what happens in the past with this type of horse. That was really good. And then there was one more. In my really early times, when I was working as a schoolboy in Verden, as Hans-Joachim Köhler. I don't know, many people, they don't know him. But Hans-Joachim Köhler, he was the first one. He built up the auctions in Verden, and he was a horseman perfect. Has written some books, and he was a real horseman. And then you only had to listen what he's saying about this type of horses. That was more than interesting. He had a lot of influence in my early times when I changed from the breeding my grandfather, my father did, and the farmers did at home. So I could see what happens at the other side of your plate. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Through your different roles in the industry, as an official inspector, as a judge, as a breeder, are there any trends in the industry that you see as really, really positive? Or are there any trends that the industry is going in that you think are quite concerning at the moment?
I'm happy that the breeding associations, they're coming closer to each other. It's not this fight 30, 40 years ago. I'm an Hanoverian breeder, I'm an Oldenburg breeder, I'm here, I'm there. We can use, at that time, we couldn't use stallions from France, from Netherlands, because they are not accepted. And I'm really happy with this, because I tried it when I'm young. So I've been in all the main breeding associations as a member, because then I could use them. I could swap with the mares, but it is brainless, that's those things. And I think that is for all of us, it's much better. And that not only two or three breeding or countries, breeding associations are always in the front. They're very, very close together. I think, Holstein has this show jumping blood over genetics, but the genetic is now in Belgium, is in the Netherlands, is already in France. So they are coming closer and closer to each other. The type is also nearly the same. In Germany, you can't say that's the Oldenburg, that's a Holsteiner that is. You can buy a purebred Holsteiner only with a different passport. In the south of Germany, in the middle of Germany, in Hanover, you can buy them everywhere. You can buy them in Denmark. That is one thing what I like. I also like that in Australia that they are coming up. There are some breeders that they're really, really good. And New Zealand also, some of them. And is they coming very close to the European breeding? Why mm-hmm. not? That's not always this. No, we are better. There's no. I think everybody, you should think for your neighbor. Your neighbor also can be your friend, can be your partner. So the whole breeding, it's helpful for all of us, because by internet, by Clip My Horse, by TV, we can watch the competition in Doha at the same and at the other side in Wellington. It's a big family, because it's becoming more and more difficult and more expensive for normal sport in equitation or in riding. And I think then that's why we have to come closer together and to work with each other. And we have to accept other breedings. We have to accept other people, and that's. But it's a general problem that many people, they don't want to accept others. Only it's their mind and they are correct, they're right. It's not true. the world has more than only one eye. So,
and finally, what advice would you offer to a young breeder or to someone at the start of their breeding program?
It's easy. Ask your dad, your grandfather, your neighbor. That's what I mean. Ask the experienced people, listen to them. You haven't to believe all what they are talking about, but the decision, you have to make your decision between maybe you have three different advice from different people, but there's always a little bit true from everybody. And the older people, they have to give this advice or to talk to the younger ones with experience. I had a long discussion just with my daughter. She said, why you don't tell me this? Because for me, it's normal. It's normal, but they want to know. The older ones, they very often they don't talk about because it's normal. Not that they don't want that other know it or learn about from your experience. But there are two parts, and ask if they're younger breeders, they should ask, because the older, it's not why they don't want to give you a tip or good advice. Ask them, they would do it, and then. Everybody has to find his own way, his plan, what he tries to breed. And if someone wants to breed only a red and white colored horse, okay. But he also has to ask someone how to produce just this color, or and ask the older ones. The experience I have is not from books. It's not from the university. It's not from professor. It's only learning by doing.
If you enjoyed this episode or any of the previous episodes, why not send it to a friend or share it on your social media?